Medical traumas can happen to anyone, from children to the elderly. Thankfully, there's life-saving level one trauma care at University Medical Center of El Paso. Our nationally renowned trauma surgeons, neurosurgeons, and nurses are equipped with the most advanced, specialized technology in our industry. So when it comes to life-saving, expert care, our community relies on UMC, our region's only Level 1 Trauma Center. At UMC, we care for El Paso.
Jennifer Ann Crescente was preparing to graduate from high school, and she had big plans for her future.
She is just a very special person who wanted to be a psychologist and follow in my footsteps and wanted to help people. Unfortunately, that's what got her killed.
She was shot and killed on February 15th, 2006. The person who pulled the trigger was Jennifer's former boyfriend. But taking her life didn't equate to him spending his life behind bars.
This man has no sense of remorse or anything else, because then he just created even more pandemonium and pain for all of us.
Now, Jennifer's grandmother is taking part in an ongoing fight to keep the killer incarcerated. In this episode of ABC 7's Borderline Crimes. It's been 18 years since Jennifer Ann Crescente was shot and killed in a wooded area near her neighborhood in Austin, Texas. Jennifer was 18 years old. She was months away from graduating from high school with honors and had dreams of being a psychologist like her grandmother.
I can't believe it's been that long.
I can't believe it either.
I mean, to think that it's been 18 years now, right?
Yeah, and she'd be a psychologist and probably married and have babies and all the things she wanted, you know, all the things we talked about.
Jennifer's grandma, her dad's mom, is Dr. Elizabeth Richeson. Dr. Richeson lives in El Paso. She has her clinical and medical psychology practice here. She told me Jennifer was born in Las Cruces and lived there until she was six. Jennifer moved to various Texas cities before settling in Austin with her mother after her parents divorced. Even though she and her only granddaughter lived in different cities, Dr. Richeson says she tried to visit with Jennifer as often as possible.
She and I were very, very close, and we made Christmas cookies together every year, and we giggle and laugh together. And, you know, the funny thing is the last time we were together, which was in Houston for a Texas Psychological Association convention, she joined me. And we put on a movie to rent. Retrospectively, thank God she was 18, because I started to look at the movie.
It was The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
And I remember some scenes coming up on it and going, yikes. And she says, Grandma, it's okay, I'm 18. But, you know, so we used to get in a little trouble together and laugh together, but just a sweetheart. She would have been a great psychologist.
Dr. Richeson choked up, thinking of that last time she saw Jennifer in person around the holidays in 2005. On Valentine's Day 2006, Dr. Richeson was talking to Jennifer on the phone. Jennifer was telling her about how she had struck up a friendship with a former boyfriend, Justin Crabb. Dr. Richeson didn't know a whole lot about him or their interactions, but in 2023, Jennifer's mother gave some insight about her daughter's troubling relationship with Crabb as part of an extensive series on the case by the newspaper The Austin American-Statesman. The two teens dated for 2.5 years. Crabb was controlling, manipulative, and tried isolating Jennifer from family and friends. Jennifer kept journals, and in the entries her mom shared with the Statesman, the teen wrote about her frustration with how Krabs spoke to her and his ongoing drug use. Friends of Jennifer interviewed by the Statesman said they would ask Jennifer what she was doing with Crab. Jennifer said he was going through a lot and had a hard home life. The two broke up when Crab was sentenced to a correctional boot camp for 90 days after assaulting an older woman and stealing her car. After only a few days of freedom, he reached out to Jennifer, and Jennifer told her grandma about that conversation.
And I asked why she was talking to someone that didn't sound like he was a good person or a healthy person mentally. And she says, "Grandma, I think I can help him."
She was looking for a car, and Crab told Jennifer he found a used one and wanted to show it to her.
And he went and picked her up and said, "Come with me, I want you to look at this car." And as they were going through the wooded area, we'll never know the details of those last minutes or seconds of her life, but as they were going through that wooded area, all I know is that she was ahead of him and he shot her in the back of the head and left her there. She was, if there's anything positive, she died immediately, because no one found her for a couple of days and she would have been there on her own dying, but she was dead immediately.
Once police found Jennifer's body, they started looking for whom she was last in contact. That led them to Justin Crabb.
And his first reaction was, "Oh, I put her on a bus to go see her dad." Number one, she was an honor student and she was planning to go visit dad at the spring break. This happened in February. Would never have gone while she was still in school. Would never have missed school. She cared a great deal about school. And the other part was she never would have been on a bus. You know, so the story just didn't fit. Her dad buys the airline tickets every time she goes out. He spent every Christmas, every spring, anytime, all summer with her. So it didn't make sense that she was gonna go in the middle of school and that he was gonna put her on a bus.
Right.
And so then they looked through that story he made up, and they began questioning him, and eventually he said, "Yeah, I did it."
The Austin American Statesman reported there was forensic evidence tying Crab to the murder, as well as a sawed-off shotgun at the scene. And while he ultimately confessed, what eats away at everyone was that he never said why he targeted Jennifer that day. Her grandma has one theory.
"We just knew about the drugs. And that was the one thing she kept confronting him on. And the more she confronted him on drug use, the more he was annoyed with her. Mm. And he actually told her friends that he was planning to kill her. He says, "You know, she's ruining my life." And so he followed through on that threat. No one believed him, because who would believe someone to say something so heinous? She cared so much. But that is also what killed her, like I said. You know, she thought she could help him, and he didn't want to be helped. You know, that's one of the things you learn, that you can only help people that want to be helped.
Crabb was charged with murder, a first-degree felony that carries a potential punishment of 5 to 99 years in prison without the possibility of parole. But for a reason not explained to Jennifer's family, the Travis County District Attorney worked out a plea deal with Crabb, and on August 1st, 2007, Crabb was sentenced to 35 years in prison with the possibility of parole.
He was charged initially with premeditated first-degree murder, which makes so much sense. We know it was premeditated. We know that he got the gun in advance. We know why he got the gun, and so on and so forth. And we know that he hid the gun in this wooded area. We know that he got her to walk through this wooded area. We know all of this. I mean, it's so clear. So he's given a very reduced sentence. He got 35 years, possibility parole, 17 and a half years. For first-degree premeditated murder, that's unheard of. And to this day, he has no remorse. He's never apologized. He's never said, "What was I thinking?" And never any sign of remorse at all.
Dr. Richardson explained how Jennifer's father, Drew Crescente, argued on the phone with the Travis County District Attorney's Office about the plea deal.
And he said, "Wait a minute. If you're dropping this, and I don't know why you did, but if you're dropping this down, then we need to get something from him. What about the person he bought?" Because Drew realized that he had to get the gun illegally. So he said, "Well, then I think you need to find out from him who got the gun for him, because that person is liable in the state of Texas.
Because Crabb was a felon, he couldn't legally buy a weapon. Drew Crescente asked the DA to have Crabb testify against the person who sold him the gun used to kill Jennifer. The Austin American-Statesman reported when the DA's office announced the plea deal, they said the deal was contingent on Crabb's cooperation in a future trial against the person who sold him the weapon. The Statesman reported Richard Roman was indicted on a murder charge. Roman allegedly provided Crabb with the gun and the ammunition. And in the state law, a person can be charged with murder if they help or try to help someone commit murder.
So now the time comes for Roman to be tried. So they went to Justin, who's now in prison, and he said, I'm not going to testify. No, I'm not going to do that. And they said, but you said you were going to. But I'm not going to. By that time, I'm sure he was advised that once he was sentenced, nobody could keep him to do or not do anything, you know, that he was a free agent. And so again, further proof this man has no sense of remorse or anything else, because then he just created even more pandemonium and pain for all of us.
The Austin American-Statesman reported the Travis County DA ended up dropping the charge against Roman, even though there was surveillance evidence showing Crabb and Roman shopping for shotgun shells hours before Jennifer was killed, and that Roman's fingerprints were found on a box of ammunition left near the crime scene. The DA in 2008 told the Statesman the plea deal was offered before Crabb offered to testify against Roman, which is why it wasn't written into the plea and why he wasn't forced to testify. I reached out to the district attorney's office in Travis County to talk about the case, but they did not respond.
And we were notified on the second anniversary of Jen's death, and it was just like insult to more injury.
To cope with their loss, Jennifer's family turned to advocacy. Dr. Richeson asked former State Senator Elliot Shapley of El Paso for help creating a pathway for families to receive a posthumous diploma for their senior student who was on track to graduate but died during the school year. Shapley filed the bill on February 15, 2007, the first anniversary of Jennifer's murder, and it was signed into law that May.
The name of the law, it's basically Jennifer's Law. And so that was the first time she started helping people.
Jennifer's dad, Drew, began an organization to educate teens about the warning signs of abusive dating relationships. It's called Jennifer Ann's Group, and Dr. Richeson serves as the advisory board chair.
And so he thought, let me make sure that we can educate to prevent. And so basically our mission is to advocate and educate to prevent dating abuse. So we started out by, we identified the 10 warning signs so that we could educate. And we started out focusing on young people. And I still think that's the place to focus, because when you educate the youth, ideally they take that forward in their lives and will understand and not tolerate abusive relationships, domestic violence. We're hoping that we can participate in helping those numbers decrease over the next, you know, decades. When we started out with the website. Then we evolved to having bookmarks, and that was pretty soon thereafter. We have bookmarks. They can be downloaded. They can be printed. Some people buy stacks and stacks of them for their schools or whatever. So they're distributed everywhere.
Now, Jennifer Ann's Group organizes a video game design contest. Participants who come from around the world design an educational video game. The goal is to make learning about self-love and self-care fun. The contest winners get prize money, and the games live on the group's website.
So we found out that if we can use these video games, and this person can sit at home in their room or in their classroom, or on their phone, some of our games, then we know that they're learning these things. And how do we know that they work? Well, we have done studies where there's a pre-test and a post-test even, and they always know more, and they always are more savvy. And I hope that they're always more inclined to make good decisions.
Jennifer Ann Crescente was 18 years old when she was killed in 2006. And now, the teen who loved to take photos and journal and write poetry has been gone as long as she lived. But her memory continues to live on in each photo lining the shelves of her grandmother's home office and filling the photo albums on a small end table. A memorial to Dr. Richeson's only granddaughter displays a framed picture of Jennifer smiling while they were on one of their numerous family vacations. And next to the photo was a tiny blue origami crane. Dr. Richeson said Jennifer had made her a folded paper crane because she liked the bird's mythology. They're a symbol of eternal youth, happiness, and longevity. But that crane was lost.
It was gone. And I know what happened. It fell off the desk, went into a trash can, and the cleaning crew comes in at night.
One day, she found a tiny origami crane on the memorial.
This showed up one day. I don't know where it came from.
Really?
I absolutely 100% do not know where this came from.
So she took it as a sign from Jennifer. The realization of how much time has passed since her granddaughter's death struck her in the summer of 2023. When Dr. Richeson received notice from the Texas Department of Criminal Justice that Justin Crabb was eligible for parole and a hearing would be held in August. She sought advice for what to do to help keep Crabb locked up. She was told to write a letter to the parole board, and she did.
What did you say in your statement to the parole board?
Basically, what I said was that I think that he's a sociopath or a psychopath. That, again, showing no remorse. How do you kill someone in cold blood? How do you kill someone without the need to protect your life? How do you make a decision that someone that you purportedly befriended or maybe cared about one day, kill them in cold blood? How do you do that without that remorse? How could he come out into society? Who's to say he wouldn't do it again? He had a rap sheet that showed that he did one bad thing after another, after another, after another. So he had violent tendencies to the extreme of murdering someone in cold blood. Shot her in the back of the head. What does that tell you? She wasn't moving toward him. He wasn't threatened. He got a gun for that purpose. This is all sociopathic behavior. And I also said that we as a family felt threatened when he made that threatening gesture in the courthouse that day, which we have on tape. I think that if he had an opportunity, he'd go find my son and shoot him. I believe those things. That's just not something I said for the purpose of the parole board. I truly believe that. He can find where I live. He can find out where the mother lives, the father lives. He can find all those things out. And I don't think that he should be trusted with anyone in this society.
According to the Austin American-Statesman, Crabb declined to answer questions about the murder while under parole review. Instead, talked about how he earned a GED and a bachelor's degree and is participating in rehab programs in prison. Crabb's parole was denied on September 21st, 2023. On the TDCJ website, the board stated it based its decision on his history of criminal, violent behavior and continual relapses despite being granted probation or parole in the past, as well as on his history of excessive substance abuse. Crabb's next parole review is set for September 2028.
How did you feel when you learned that his parole was denied?
I felt profound relief. It was kind of a funny thing because it was like, oh, I'm so relieved. I'm so relieved. But within about a minute, I went, oh dear, because I was also told that he would be up for parole in 5 years. He hasn't changed an iota, so I don't know what's going to happen in 5 years. Will he be a better person in 5 years? I'm sorry, I don't believe it, because sociopaths and psychopaths have no conscience. How do you learn that what you did wasn't right? How do you learn to be a better person if you have no remorse? Well, I also know with my age and my health, I'm going to be writing letters now because I want to make sure those letters can speak for me if I can't speak for myself at that time.
Jennifer can no longer speak for herself, but her words live on. Her family uses journal entries and poems to highlight the warning signs of dating violence. She wrote this poem called Butterfly after she broke up with Crab.
Before I met you, I was a beautiful butterfly. I was free to soar anywhere I pleased. I could wear my brightest colors and be brilliant. There was lots of bliss. Freedom came in bulk. But there you were. The stupid little boy and your stupid butterfly net. The little boy angry at the world. The boy who tore off my wings. You complicated my life. You kept me busy. I was your entertainment, your muse. You took away my brilliance, my happiness, my ability to soar. I wasn't happy then. But now I escaped. I have left you behind. I am the beautiful butterfly in all the pictures. Grew new and even more brilliant wings. I can soar higher and more elegantly than ever before. I am free and I feel better than better. I know I can be a better me on my own. A bigger, more important me. All thanks to you. Yes, thanks to you. My wings are brighter and they glow more than ever now. Because I know I don't need an angry little boy like you to take my free time away.
Learn the warning signs of dating violence and get help if you need it. The information is in the show notes, and so is the link to Jennifer Ann's group. Borderline Crimes is a podcast produced, written, and edited by me, Stephanie Valle. Bridget Grummet at the Austin American Statesman produced a full series on this case in 2023, leading up to Justin Crabb's parole hearing, which I used for some source material. Valora Gray read the poem written by Jennifer Ann Crescente. Stay tuned. Another episode of Borderline Crimes is coming soon. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast for updates.
Medical traumas can happen to anyone, from children to the elderly. Thankfully, there's life-saving level 1 trauma care at University Medical Center of El Paso. Our nationally renowned trauma surgeons, neurosurgeons, and nurses are equipped with the most advanced, specialized technology in our industry. So when it comes to life-saving, expert care, our community relies on UMC, our region's only level 1 trauma center. At UMC, we care for El Paso.